Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
What's cooking? I get to lick the pot. I get to lick the pot.
You get your hands out of that pot.
Oh,
now out until I call you. Sakes, I never saw such a hungry rabbit. Come and get it. Now you eat the nice carrot all up, and Mother will get your bed ready. Mother. Rock-a-bye rabbit in the hot oven, into my mouth for dinner I'm shoving.
Boys and girls of every age, wouldn't you like to see something strange?
Come with us and you will see, this our town of Halloween.
This is Halloween, this is Halloween. Pumpkins scream in the dead of night.
This is Halloween, everybody make a scene.
Trick or treat,
tell the neighbors on the diaphragm.
It's our town, everybody's free.
This town of Halloween.
I am the one hiding under your bed. Teeth ground sharp and eyes glowing red.
I am the one hiding under your stairs. Fingers like snakes and spiders in my hair.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. And by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. He's the best thing to happen to the environment since the solar-powered hamster wheel. Great. Now he's putting hamsters out of business. Here he is, Mike Novak.
And what's that holiday again that we're coming up on?
I believe it was formerly known as All Hallows Eve, but in the modern era, it is Halloween.
And of course, I have to play everything for Heather because she's the world's biggest Halloween fan.
I love Halloween. It's my favorite.
So you got to understand, and I've explained this before, I started out as an actor and, you know, I dressed up all the time, so I'm bored by that.
See,
now.
Me, the draw is, it's like, well, first off, there's lots of candy.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, chocolate in abundance is always good. And then, yeah, for one day, you can be anything you want. I love that whole ideology. That's what I wrap around.
That's my life of 365 a year. I can be whoever I want.
No, those are just the multiple personalities swimming in your head.
Well,
there.
That's true. And they're speaking to me right now.
Are they telling you nice things, I hope?
Yeah.
Good.
I just got an email. This is weird. It just came in at Dateline, Chicago, 8:34 a.m. We just got an email from, I believe, Helsinki.
Helsinki?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Actually,
I have to remember where Helsinki is.
Finland.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
From, maybe not exactly Helsinki, but near it. Espoo. That's it. I've never even heard of Espoo, my hometown. The second biggest city in Finland.
It's called Espoo?
Yeah. Espoo. There are about 250,000 inhabitants here. Espoo is located in South Finland. It is the neighboring city of Helsinki, which is the capital. There are 5,200,000 people in Finland. Finland is famous for sauna. Sibelius, one of the world's great, yes, thumbs up from Michael Howard in the studio. I like Sibelius as well. Linux Thorvalds, the creator of the Linux operating system, Nokia mobile phones, and Angry Birds mobile games.
Angry Birds comes from Finland?
Yep.
They're smart people because people love... I think they're making a movie out of that now. Angry Birds.
Are they?
Yes.
Well, Hannu... Oh, boy, I'm going to massacre this name. Asikainen. Hannu Asikainen. He's 47 years old. Education, Master of Engineering. He works in Helsinki. Economic and Planning Center as Project Manager of Kalasatama Fish Harbor, Urban Development Project. How about that?
Nice.
And he says, I'm writing to inform you that I had the pleasure of listening to your station on the frequency of 820 AM on the 12th of December, 2010.
Wow. What a memory.
At 3 o'clock to 4:55 AM Central Standard Time. It's weird. You might wonder why I write to you, because you're a radio station which serves a local audience. I think you might be interested in knowing that it is sometimes, when radio atmosphere conditions are favorable, possible to listen to your station in other parts of the world, if the reception time can be short. And then he sent me an MP3 of the audio.
Nice. So atmospheric shift sent our signal to near Helsinki?
Yeah, so he wasn't listening
online. Nice, atmospheric drift, is that what they call it?
Wow. And you know, because we've got the hamsters in the back that I'm putting out of business that power this station.
Yeah. Good for those hamsters, though.
Yeah.
Nice.
And good for for listening in Helsinki.
Yeah. Well, I like it that he's getting it in traditional radio fashion. Because, I mean, we've gotten letters from England and Ireland and other parts of the world.
Well,
but
Germany,
they
remember? We've got listeners in Berlin.
Yeah.
And
Düsseldorf.
And Düsseldorf.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And a few spots. But, yeah,
they get us on the stream. Baby.
Mm. Uh-huh. So everyone around the world, happy almost Halloween.
There we
from
go.
From the Mike Novak Show.
Including the people in Helsinki.
Yes.
Or actually in...
In Apu. What was it?
It is... Espoo,
sorry.
Espoo. That sounds like a Halloween word, doesn't
Apu?
It?
Isn't that a character on The Simpsons?
Yeah, I think so.
Whoops.
Good morning, everybody. And in the studio, I am, I'm pleased to have Michael and Amelia Howard in the studio, and we will chat with them in just a second about Eden Place Nature Center. Rick DeMille weather coming up at the bottom of the hour. We'll have the forecast for winter.
Oh, dear.
And people are saying it's going to be a nasty one. We'll see. Second hour, I believe we're going to try to talk a little bit about Mayor Rahm Emanuel's food summit that he had last week. And I know Michael was an attendee, one of the fortunate people to be there. That was not an easy ticket, was it, Michael?
Oh, no, that was not an easy ticket to come by. And it was a fortunate opportunity for us to go and be able to share not only with the mayor of Chicago, but, you know, there were almost 20 mayors from around the country in attendance as well. So they got to hear quite a bit from the food growers on the south side of Chicago.
That's great. And I want to talk more about that because it's not without controversy either.
Oh, no. Chicago is a town built on controversy. What would it be like to live in Chicago without controversy?
No, you got to have your controversy here. And it doesn't seem to matter who's the mayor.
No, it doesn't matter.
It just, the controversy continues.
Yes, it does.
In the Sustainable Food Fundamentals segment, we've got the folks from Faith in Place who will be here, Robin Shermer and Layla Shushani. And we're going to be talking about their winter farmers markets. And maybe we'll even talk about something little thing we're planning together. I don't know if we have the go ahead to do that yet. Do you?
Actually, no, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's been officially approved. Officially,
okay.
But we can do the unofficial announcement.
Maybe we could. All right. Maybe we'll
I think
do
we
it.
Can do the. It'll be so, unofficial.
So stick around. There's a big
unofficial,
big unofficial announcement, and I'm going to play this just for you because I can.
Alive! It's alive! It's alive!
That it is.
See, Michael.
He's better than the original one, in my opinion.
Yeah, the other one takes way too much
time. Yeah, he's much calmer.
This is 7 seconds, and the old one is 19.
Right.
From the original Frankenstein movie. See, Michael. I got described in Garden Design magazine this year as highly distractible.
Oh, wow.
So I have to follow suit. I have to live up to my reputation. Michael and Amelia Howard are here in studio. I'll tell you what, I'm going to let you flip that around. You grab that microphone, Amelia, and Michael will grab that. Because I want you both to speak here. Michael and I have known each other for a number of years. In fact, you were on my program when I was at Gargantua Radio down the dial.
Exactly.
And you've been on with Mike Sanders on Our Town. You're kind of a Southside icon, whether you want to be or not.
Well, that is something that seems to continue to follow me wherever I go. It's amazing. I was just in D.C., and it was amazing to find out so many people on the Hill actually were anticipating my arrival. And so my reputation definitely precedes me. I have to apologize for that.
No need to apologize for that at all. I mean, you were the driving force behind Eden Place Nature Center in the Fuller Park neighborhood. And, you know, I would ask you to explain it, but I want to turn the mic over to Amelia, because I saw you guys at the Open Lands annual luncheon on Thursday, where you were given an award. I've even got my little program here, and Michael received the Conservation Leadership Award. But I was moved by Amelia, who was moved as she was speaking. And I want you to tell the folks about, in short, your experiences over the last 15 years or so in putting Eden Place together. Because I know Michael waxes poetic on it all the time. but you're kind of the behind-the-scenes person, and you've been there every step of the way. What does it mean to you?
It's like watching a dream come true. It's painting a picture and sort of filling the dots in and the color, and it's been a long process. It hasn't been an easy process, but it's been very enjoyable.
Well, I know that you've been kind of an inspiration to me, Michael, because when I first interviewed you, it was the first time I had a sense of the problems associated with soil in Chicago, meaning mostly lead, but there's other contaminants in there. You basically, lived across the street from a landfill that was about two stories high? Is that correct?
That is correct. For over 35 years in Fuller Park community, there existed this illegal dump site that would just appear and disappear and appear and disappear over the years.
Where did it go when it disappeared?
That was also a mystery. big trucks would show up and cart it or either move it to the side so that more could be dumped there. We basically just had a real history of acceptance for too long in Fuller Park until my wife and I and other residents decided after that health report that we were the most lead poisoned community in Chicago, that enough was enough.
And I've had a similar thing happened to me this year because if regular listeners to the program know that I started a community garden in my own neighborhood in Logan Square. Mm-hmm. And it's not in the fancy part of Logan Square by any stretch of the imagination. It's the not very fancy part. And there was a lot at the corner, and we wanted to work on it. And before we did, having listened to you years ago and talking to other people and knowing a lot more than I did then, I did a lead test of the soil in my own backyard, in my garden, where I've gardened for 10 years. And it was through the roof. It was through the roof.
And that is one of the despairing things about urban soils, period, across the whole continent and across the world. When you had this industrialized age that we all went through all over the world, polluting the environment in so many ways, and even on commercials, we spread all types of pesticides and chemicals on our lawns and on our bushes and on our roses, thinking that this was the right thing to do. We did not understand how we were poisoning the terra that we depended on so much to sustain us.
And you found this in across the street from you. What finally snapped? What made you just say, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore?
Okay, this is actually the honest to God truth. My youngest son at the time, when we moved back to Fuller Park, we had actually gutted the house that my wife grew up in, and we had rehabbed it totally. So everything.
And you had to be careful about that because it was probably chock full of lead paint, wasn't it?
It was chock full of lead paint.
And probably some asbestos?
Oh, definitely asbestos and some other stuff that I really don't want to mention. But but what really got us was that after we moved our family into this totally renovated home, my son's lead level started going up through the roof. And my wife was like, I don't know where it's coming from because the doctor says it's the peeling paint and the flaking paint, which was always the assumption in those days. And I said, we don't have any peeling paint. We don't have any flaking paint. So where is he getting this lead? And so I started going back to my background as a property manager way back when I managed over 400 units of affordable housing in Austin. And that same problem would come up with a lot of tenants that I had rented to in these brand new units. And what I found there, I suspected also in Fuller Park, that a lot of the children during the summer months, especially playing in these empty vacant lots in the city of Chicago, would inhale an enormous amount of lead through the dust that they would kick up in those vacant lots. But then also, we also tested our water because I knew the infrastructure in our community was all really old. And there we also saw the lead levels going through the roof. And it took us a while to convince the city that that was one of the main contributors to the lead levels in our community.
How does the lead get into the water?
Well, our community, I know for sure, was built right after the Chicago Fire around the turn of the century. And what happened was Fuller Park at that time of the Chicago Fire was not in the city proper. That was considered the country. And so the city limit stopped at Persian Road, which is 39th Street, which also happens to be the north boundary for Fuller Park. And so when the city changed its fire codes and would not allow people to build with anything but stone, a lot of people couldn't afford to build with masonry. They moved out into the suburbs, and they were very ingenious on scavenging whatever they could from the Chicago Fire. So a lot of the water lines and infrastructure that was put in at that time actually included wooden pipes that were sealed with lead and oakum. It also included lead up the yanging because it was a cheap material to build with at the time, and it was readily available from all the industrialization that was going on in and around Chicago and Indiana. And so all of that lead and all those old wooden pipes just filled with lead oakum to keep them sealed had been in the ground since the Chicago Fire and had not been changed out. And so our water supply was truly contaminated.
And are there still pipes like that in operation in the city?
I do believe in some of the older communities that are like Fuller Park, who didn't have much of a political voice or strength to continually to get those type of revenues to come in and keep the infrastructures up to date. I do believe we still have that in and out somewhere in the pockets of Chicago. And so it's really imperative that community people all across the city, you know, pay attention to their water, test their water to make sure that it's not having that much lead. But the only unfortunate part about it is that the majority of homes in Chicago still have at least 30 to 40 feet of lead pipe supplying their water, because from the city's main, even if it's a brand new city's main, what they call the corporation cock, the house has to make a connection with lead pipe that has not been replaced, you know, in over almost 100 years. And almost in every instance around the whole city of Chicago, that 30 to 40 feet from the city main water line to the building, whether it be a single flat or a multi-unit building, it is a lead pipe.
My house is 125 years old, so I'm guessing I got a lead pipe coming into the house.
Most definitely do. I can put money on that one.
I don't even have to bring you there to look at it. I got to talk to Ron Cowgill from Mighty House and get that thing replaced. We're talking to Michael Howard, and Amelia Howard is here in the studio as well from Eden Place Nature Center. So here you've got this lead. I assume you had the soil tested across the street, and that's where you found out that the levels were astronomical.
Oh, the lead was one of the main issues that we found, but we also found other heavy metals. We found cadmium. We found mercury. abundance of asbestos that actually came from the construction debris. In our community, I had noticed it many times personally when they demolished the house. They didn't put it on a truck and cart it away. They actually ground the house into the basement, if it had a basement, and they just covered it with about 3 inches of some soil they brought from somewhere else and went away. So all of that contaminants that were the house was built with were just buried in the ground, and it leached during rain periods, and they got kicked up when kids would go across that play lot.
That was a play lot. It's an old basement just
exactly.
with the remains, the rubble from the house underneath the soil.
Oh, yeah. Actually, some of those basements, the foundation walls were never removed, and they actually still exist. And so the kids playing there all summer would dig down into that basement because they played in that lot because it had all the right ingredients for a good game of baseball.
So you said this has got to stop, and you're in a neighborhood that had traditionally not a lot of clout.
No clout.
And you probably didn't have any at the time. So how did you make this happen?
Oh, my wife and I, we started taking our family to every city meeting, every budget meeting that the city would put on the agenda where the public was invited. And we started basically advocating for a more healthier Fuller Park. And so it wasn't really until I actually had some pictures of city contractors doing some actual dumping mm-hmm. on this same lot. And I also had some very large pictures blown up of the old legs that held up the elevator train in Chicago that the same contractor had left on the site. So it was really, you know, irrevocable proof that a lot of this dumping is being done by city contractors. And that was the turning point when the city decided, what do you need? What do you want? And so we weren't.
What do you demand?
We weren't politically savvy enough at the time to know how to respond. We just said we want it cleaned up. And so my wife and I started doing a community cleanup on Saturdays, trying to entice the kids with hot dogs, free hot dogs, if they would come and help us clean up this debris.
Our phone number is 773-838-9278 if you have a question or a comment for Michael Howard. And later in the second hour, I'm definitely going to want to take some phone calls about the food summit in Chicago last week and food insecurity and food deserts, as they call them. And some people respond negatively to that name and or that phrase, and I understand that. But we will talk a little bit about that. But I want to get back to the story of Eden Place Nature Center. So it's one thing to get the city to finally recognize that you can't just dump tons of stuff in front, you know, across the street, which it just seems weird, but I understand it. So you get them to stop. But the problem is you've still got this ground and it's still contaminated.
Yeah, the big problem came was how do we remediate this? And so I contacted the EPA on the federal level, and I contacted the city's Department of Environment, who at the time was very responsive. They did come in and help us at least find a lot of the dumpers once we got that connection made.
But, oh, wait, so it was still some – were you getting the fly-by-nights there coming in? Yeah?
Yes, the fly-by-nights were still coming even after we
Well, because they were used to it, you know?
That was the place to go.
That was the place, yeah.
Everybody knew, and it was surprising, you know, and so –
What do you mean we can't dump here? We've been doing it for decades.
And that was the attitude. One guy actually got out of the truck and said, man, I don't know what your problem is. You know, I've been dumping here forever. So what are you mad about? You don't live here. I said, yes, I do. I say, I smell everything you dump. I say, I breathe all the dust every time you dump. I say, I wake up in the morning and see what you've dumped during the middle of the night. So, you know, don't tell me I don't live here. I say, you don't live here. And that's why you're dumping on us. And so it was a really different kind of a time to go through that, to change the culture of these local contractors who was just used to dumping there and getting away with it.
And I'm sure that was a long, hard battle. But again, still, you wanted to do something with that land. When did that idea germinate?
Well, the idea came about once we started getting all of that debris cleaned off, and I saw the expanse of open land, and I said to myself, well, you know what? the community doesn't even understand the environmental injustice that they've been living with for five decades. They don't understand the ramifications of all this ill health that they're living with. We should put some type of learning center here where we can educate the community and the greater city about environmental injustice. We can educate them on environmental issues. And when I started talking about that at the monthly community meetings and bringing up the idea of this environmental learning center, you know, most of my community looked at me like I was crazy. It's like, man, we don't need no environmental center. You know, we need somebody to help us pay our rent, you know. And I said, well, you don't have to worry about your rent if you're dying from cancer.
Well, didn't it come up in the Open Lands Luncheon, the idea that black folks sometimes think that environmentalism is a white folks' term?
Oh, too many black people around the country still believe that, you know, environmentalism is a white people thing. And, you know, those tree huggers, you know, they need to get a life. And not really understanding that if we're not protecting the planet that we live on, we're not having much of a future for our youth that's going to come, you know, behind us. And so that's been like my wife and I's main mantra to galvanize people of color and to introduce them to the world of environmentalism and make them understand that they have to be part of this. You know, and there are some reports that I have found out that actually state that people of color are more willing to be taxed for environmental issues if it's about cleaning up a neighborhood, if it's about getting some healthy food in the neighborhood. So that is promising. It's just that they've always been so used to other people being the clarion callers and banner, you know, holders in the street, and not themselves. And so we're trying to make more people of color get involved.
So fast forward a little bit, and you started rehabilitating the space, really. And I imagine you capped it with soil.
Well, that was the biggest surprise that we found out when they did the city did the environmental phase one report that they presented to us and said, well, it is polluted, but it's not polluted enough to be considered for federal funding. And I'm like, what? You mean we can't really clean it up like it needs to be cleaned up? They says, yeah, it's not contaminated enough.
Oh,
I had never
darn
heard
it.
That. I had never heard that. I didn't understand. I mean, like, I'm not sick enough for treatment?
Do you mean that it has to be so contaminated that a dog that accidentally wanders onto it has to explode?
Yes, he has to explode. Yeah. Our dogs just wandered off and died in a corner. They
right,
didn't explode.
That's no, they have to explode.
And so we couldn't pass that litmus test. And so we did work with the City of Chicago's Department of Environment. And we came up with the solution to encapsulate Eden Place with an 8-inch barrier of new topsoil from a proven source.
Did you use clay at all? Because I understand the newest technology involves using a layer of clay first. As you know, lead doesn't move very readily in the soil. It's not going to go through that. And then putting topsoil on top of that.
Well, we didn't go with too much lead because we were pretty much lead. Clay-based soil from the beginning. Most of what was there was really heavy clay, and so it already didn't allow for much drainage.
Uh-huh.
And so we were concerned that if we put another barrier that was impenetrable to water, that we would have flooding problems and leaching problems, which was going on down the street in the city park. I won't get into that one. That's a whole other issue we dealt with. But what we came up with was a series of channels and drainage that's been buried in and underneath the new foundation of soil to drain off all of the rain that we get on Eden Place.
And then, you know, you started winning environmental awards and all kinds of things, and kids started coming and butterflies started happening, and you even had wetlands there. And you really did transform that lot into you call it a nature center, a park, whatever you want to call it, a garden, all
of it. We get insulted when people call us a community garden. We are not a community garden.
Well, I didn't use that phrase, community garden.
I'm just clarifying it for the Chicagoland population. Eden Place Nature Center is an environmental learning center, and you're invited to come down. My wife is a pre-K teacher, so tell them about your children, Amelia, when you would bring your children over to learn about nature.
We have a a group of three, four, and 5 year olds. And during the year, we bring the caterpillars into the classroom, and they watch them change and turn to butterflies. And at the end of the school year, we do something, well, I called it Free Willy Day, but we take the butterflies over to Eden Place, and we release them at Eden Place. And it gets to be a traditional thing that the kids love to do, and we talk about the butterflies, and I tell them if they see the butterflies in the neighborhood, they can't harm them or anything. You can't catch them. Just enjoy their beauty, and they enjoy it immensely. It's like a big celebration for them.
That's wonderful. And the fact that you can even do this now at the park.
Right, right, especially at that location.
And you have had specials done for you, PBS, and I mean, this is, as you said, you go to Washington and people know who you are. That's got to be kind of gratifying.
Actually, it's humbling, Mike, to tell you the truth, because basically we're still at ground zero as far as we're concerned. Yes, we have won national awards. We have international attention from people all over the world, and they come and they visit and they ask us how do we do what we do, because they want to do the same in their own countries. We had the Minister of Lebanon come by and spend the entire day with us, and he was so impressed he asked me to join him on the rest of his tour because he wasn't through asking me questions. Mm-hmm. We had 19 scientists from the Middle East come and spend an entire day with us, and we actually gave them an American barbecue because they wanted to experience the American culture from an African-centric standpoint. And so we gave them an African-American barbecue that blew them away because
blew their minds.
They really didn't understand, you know, what they were going to get when they got to Eden Place. But after they heard the story, watched the video, ate the food, and sat around on our grand lawn, It was about 10:30 at night, and they were ready to go get another case of wine. And I was like, no, it's time for you to go, gentlemen. I said, I've been here all day. I'm really tired. But those scientists have become friends, and we correspond with them quite regularly. They're always quizzing us on in terms of what we're doing next and our innovations. And that's the thing I think that has really made Eden Place special, is the way we've been able to innovate with nothing. And the problem with that is people think you're doing so good, they don't support you. We've done all that we've done without a building, and that's what I want to make the Chicagoland people understand. We're trying to raise $1 million to build a building.
You know, you deserve to have somebody just hand you $1 million right now for all the work you've done. You've done several $1 million worth of work, not just for that community, but for the whole city. And you have people from other countries coming to look at it. Just being an ambassador in that regard and a teacher. So any of my listeners have $1 million they want to hand over to Michael, you just contact me, okay? Give me a holler. I'll launder it. And we'll get it. Seriously, no, don't contact me. Go to Eden Place Nature Center, and that's EdenPlaceNatureCenter.com. And you can see all the good work. Some of it's up on my website, MikeNovak.net. This week's show, I've got links and some photos up there. All right, I'm going to take a phone call. And then before I let you go, we got to talk about the summit this week, because that's an important thing. Let's go to the phones, and guess who? It's Santo, the bus driver. How you doing, Santo?
I'm okay. Good morning. A beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Yeah, well,
here.
At least it's not, there's no snowstorms here.
I love it. Anyways, listen to me. I just kind of like got in real late on this conversation over here, and I listened to the gentleman talking over there, and he was talking about the pollution. Remember how he said his ground wasn't polluted enough to get federal grants and da-da-da-da-da. And I don't know if you remember back in the 70s when they had that New Earth. Remember that New Earth? They were taking that sludge out of the canals, and then they used to pile it over there on First Avenue, and the people were taking it and put it on their gardens, and they were growing tomatoes the size of footballs, you know? talking about what this guy was talking about how the government said it wasn't polluted enough, and
it's polluted just fine.
I'm almost kind of using like the race card over here, because it's like not good enough for one, but it's not good enough. So some people get squashed by the government, or they're not taken care of when they should be. And it was that thing back in the New Earth when these people on the east side. this big garden. I remember it. I was, you know, because I'm from the
Well, you know what?
Let me explain this real quick.
Sure.
And they built this big garden, and they cleaned up their neighborhood and cleaned up this yard, and they grew these tomatoes with this new earth, and then the EPA or whatever government came in and said they had to destroy everything because they had all this heavy metals, MTBEs, and, you know, dioxins in there that was grown through the plants and inside the tomatoes. Well, they made these people destroy everything. But in the same sense, they never said nothing about the Alabama farmers and the Mississippi farmers that were taking these barge loads of this stuff down for these big sharecroppers down in southern United States and shipping it back up north for us to eat anyways. Mm-hmm. You know, so you look at that government thing, you know, it's almost like people should, when they're doing this stuff, they maybe not even get the government involved. I'm hired to be a, you know, a knucklehead when I say this stuff, but, you know, it sometimes it deters too much on what you're trying to do for your community, and all of a sudden they throw a rag in the gears over here.
Yeah, well,
you're trying to do a good thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, Sandal, some things have changed and some things have not. You know, and what's changed is, it's a whole nother conversation, and that's biosolids, about what we pull out of the water and we treat it now, and some people, I've talked to soil scientists who say this is the future, that we have to figure out what to do with our waste because we can't just keep dumping it, and we have to remediate it. But that's very different from what happened in the 70s. And that's a really good story, and I appreciate it, and I'm always happy to have you listen to the show, Sando.
Okay.
Take care, buddy.
Bye.
Bye. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. We're going to wrap up with Michael and Melia Howard from Eden Place Nature Center. Final question, our final topic here is, okay, you were at the big summit with Mayor Rahm Emanuel this week. And as I said earlier, it's a little controversy involving that because Michelle Obama was there and CEOs and mayors from other city, and it's very fancy stuff, and there are some people who get really when I say CEOs, Walmart, Walgreens, there are people with boots on the ground who get really nervous when you start talking about Walmart and the fact that they just gave $1 million to Growing Power, and some people said, "Oh yeah, well they've been totally bought out and co-opted." And you were invited to the table. Give me your impressions of that meeting and what was said.
Well, I really believe that the people that were invited from the community and from the grassroots not-for-profits that are doing the food piece in Chicago had a lot to share with the mayor and all the other CEOs and other mayors in attendance. And I don't think that the other visiting people understood the politics and the dynamics that are going on in Chicago in regards to this food issue because they really behind the eight ball themselves. A lot of them came from areas that were agricultural, and so they made a good point of sharing that even though they're surrounded by fields and fields of either corn or sorghum, that they're not too far from being a food desert themselves because everything they eat is trucked in. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of enlightening. But the mayor, I think, has a job in balancing from his perspective what he thinks corporations can do. Our problem is that corporations put us in this whole mess in the first place.
Bingo.
And so you can't just continue to do the same thing over and over and over and expect different results. I mean, in my world, that's called insanity when you think you're going to get different results from doing the same thing over and over again. And so what we're trying to do is to show the city that we have a process, if given the proper resources, where we can provide jobs that are sorely needed in our community. We can provide a clean source of good food that's grown by local growers, and not even only provide food for families, but provide food for retail and restaurants as well. And so it's a big mishmash, Mike, in terms of what was talked about that day, what was covered. We each got a chance to showcase for about 5 minutes what we were all doing individually. But I was trying to steer the conversation about what we should be doing collectively. I don't think that this problem is going to be solved by individual people doing their own thing in little bitty secluded areas. This has to be a large-scale movement around the entire city where we're all working toward the same goals.
Well spoken. Yeah, a lot of folks are concerned that the administration will give lip service to the people who speak like you, which is that the community has to be involved, and then just go back to the same old, mm-hmm. which is big money, big you know, when I hear that, when I see bringing in Walgreens and Walmart and saying we're going to solve the food problem in Chicago, what comes into my head? Occupy Chicago. Occupy Wall Street. It's like, wait a second. Isn't this why those people are out there?
Exactly.
This kind of solution. So if you are going to bring in the Walmarts and the Walgreens, you better bring in Michael Howard, and you better bring in Growing Power and Growing Home and Angelic Organics, mm-hmm. Learning Center and Resource Center, mm-hmm. and all the people who have been doing this in Chicago for decades.
For decades, yes. For
decades. And don't just nod and smile at them and just say, so, Walgreens, how much money do you have? You know? And because there are studies that show that it doesn't matter sometimes if the supermarkets are there. People can still eat unhealthy because they don't know. They don't learn. You have to teach them as well.
You gotta teach them. And the problem, too, also with big businesses, they're really centered more around the NOI, you know, net operating income. They want to know how much profit they're going to make at the end of the day, whereby if you have local growers, you know, with a personal relationship with the community they're helping to feed, they're going to have more incentive to do a better job of providing a better product for the community.
Well, I could do this all day, and I don't have the time. I've got to get to Rick DeMille. It has been such a pleasure to have you back on my show, and it was too long, and we can't make it this long.
No,
we've got
to do it much sooner than this.
Yeah, and I'm going to be very honest. I'll cop to it. I've not been to Eden Place, so I'm going to go down there. I'm
going to
see. I wasn't going to tell anybody,
down.
Mike, because you know we've been friends a long time.
You know what? You know, transparency. Rahm Emanuel says he's transparent. He ain't transparent like I'm transparent.
Well, we're trying to get him to Eden Place as well. So, yeah. Mayor, okay, yeah. Come on down,
and then you come up to Green on McLean in my neighborhood and see it, because we did the whole soil thing too and mm-hmm. capped the lead and mm-hmm. put the fabric. And okay. you know, we're and teaching the kids about
go.
It and the what we learned there.
Bravo, bravo.
When you bring the kids, they bring the parents.
They bring the
adults.
Definitely.
Well, that's the future. You gotta bring the kids, man. You know, otherwise you don't have anybody to take over when you and I are gone.
You
have to come see our chickens and our goats
and our ponies
and our Shetland ponies.
I mean, you got to and
right
your bus
in the
and your and your
and
magic
the solar bus,
solar the,
bus.
Solar, yes. The magic bus.
Yes.
That's
yes.
right,
woo, magic bus
in the neighborhood
in the hood. All right, well, that's Michael and Amelia Howard. Thank you so much, and go to their website www.edenplacenaturecenter.com, and we will talk again very, very soon. In the words of the commercial, here we go. I'm talking about surviving the winter. Actually, in this particular case, I'm talking about how to get your plants to survive the winter, which is why the November-December issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine can be so helpful. It holds the key to keeping your plants alive during what some people are predicting will be a brutal winter. We'll hear about that from Rick DeMille in a second. We can start with an article by our very own Beth Botts, who warns of the perils of ice melters like sodium chloride on your garden beds and lawn. Her advice? Shovel early and often. For a start, there's other remedies too. Of course, if your plants are indoors, you might have other problems like insects. There's a story that identifies the most common pests and how to deal with them. Then there's my column on the inside back page. I'm often considered a pest, but there's no way to deal with me. Pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over Chicago, but it's a lot easier if you subscribe. Call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600, or you can go to chicagolandgardening.com.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs, siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545. Or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
And Michael's just showing me pictures of plants he's got growing there right now. And how many greenhouses you got there? And
currently we have two hoop houses, and we have 10 online hopefully for next year.
Cool. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Okay, I know that it isn't even Halloween yet, but it will be the holiday season before you know it, and it doesn't hurt to plan ahead. This year, you might want to consider having your outdoor lights put up by the Care of Trees. Their lighting package includes a professional design, setup, takedown, and storage of your holiday lighting and decorations. Their professional-grade lights utilize state-of-the-art fasteners and hardware that will protect your property and can be used year after year, not to mention the LEDs that will reduce your energy costs. With 9 locations, the Care of Trees has been serving Chicagoland for 60 years. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Put a spell on you. Because you're mine.
Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, the Mike Novak Show. We go to the man who puts a spell on all of us, and that is Rick DeMaio. How you doing, Rick?
Yeah, I'm great, Mike. You know, you're talking about a winter forecast, and I guess I can already say that I expect above normal snowfall for much of the Northeast this winter.
Where's my bell? I don't even have my bell out. I gotta...
Yeah, the question is, Mike, the question is, do we consider this snowfall part of this year or the end of last year?
That's a really good question. I think that I don't know how you guys do that, but I think it's this year.
Yeah, it'll be this year.
Yeah, but that's okay.
This is historic, without a doubt.
But every historic... time we turn around, we seem to be having historic.
Yep.
Weather. It's yep. This. The whole year has been like that.
Mm-hmm. It's one for the books in many regards, and it's this continuation of high variability. I think the warmer oceans along the Gulf Stream, have had plenty to do with this. The amount of moisture in the atmosphere, there was a strong tropical feed of moisture coming off of what was remnants of ex-Hurricane Rena was actually kind of pulled up into the system. And some of the liquid water amounts, Mike, anywhere between almost 1.5 inches and 3 inches in some areas of northern New Jersey, northwest Connecticut, much of Massachusetts, parts of Maine. And the snow's still falling. In fact, in some areas of northwestern Massachusetts and the Berkshires, where the elevation's up at about 1,500 feet, into central New Hampshire, parts of Maine, anywhere between, get this, 26 and 28 inches of snow. And that's heavy, wet snow. Usually that kind of stuff, you know, occurs when you have, you know, more of a drier snow. So some of the liquid water content in this thing is probably about an 8-to-1 ratio. What that means is typically we look at about 10 inches of snow to about 1 inch of water. But I think the most difficult thing about this is the fact that so many trees that are still fully leafed. Remember, the Northeast kind of turns about a week to 10 days later than we do here in the Midwest. Even though this is parts of the upper sections of the Northeast, there are millions and millions of people without power, probably more so for a longer period of time with this as opposed to with Hurricane Irene, oddly enough, because of so many of the limbs cannot hold on to the weight of the snow and they come crashing down and take the power lines with it.
So, well, yeah, no, I had, you know, people don't realize that what damage an early storm can do like that, because and there are a number of trees that don't drop their leaves sometimes through the whole winter. It takes like some oaks.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they just hold on to them. So if they get that heavy snow, you're right, they're going to snap.
Yeah, my my parents who were in the Northeast during the I think it was the ice storm blizzard of early 2003. It was about the first week of November up in the Poconos. They were without power for 3 days, Mike. 3 days. And I wouldn't be surprised if some people in Northeast are in a similar situation. The forecast was actually pretty good. The numerical models did a very, very good job about 2 days out with this. Nor'easters are always much more difficult to predict than Midwest storms, and we'll get to our Midwest winter outlook here in just a minute. But even on Friday, there were hints that this was going to produce about 8 to 12 inches of snow inland, but that 8 to 12 all of a sudden became 12 to 18, and in fact, it was snowing much of the day in New York yesterday, even though the airports reported record snowfall. It's interesting, the air temperature barely made it to 32. It was about 33, 34 degrees through much of the event. There was thunder, there was lightning, large wet snowflakes. The area roadways mainly stayed wet, but still, if you went inland about 20 or 30 miles, it was basically a mess. The only good thing about this was that it was on a Saturday. If this would have been on a work day, I don't know how how it eventually would have turned out, but this is truly one for the books, without a doubt, Mike.
Well, you're right, though, that folks do want to hear, because they've been hearing bad news in advance for Chicago.
Yeah, and you know what? I have no idea where this all came from. It first started out with AccuWeather issuing a forecast of people will want to move from Chicago after this winter, which is typical AccuWeather fashion of overhyping just about a bright sunny day. I really don't understand that. And then it kind of got a little bit more legs when Channel 7 did a story on it, and there it is at the top of the newscast, blah, blah, blah. There's Ravi Bashwal on the lakefront talking about the upcoming winter season. And strangely enough, I bumped into Ravi about 2 weeks after that, and I kind of wanted to ask him a question about it, but he was pumping gas and I was pumping gas, and I was like, I don't think this is a good time to be talking about this. We were both kind of in a rush. But then it just kind of got a whole bunch of other news coverage, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, when you look at the forecast, all AccuWeather said was that we were going to have between 55 and 60 inches, but that's what we had last year. So I don't think people realize that the forecast that they issued was basically the same one we've had around here the last 3 years. So the bottom line is, and I only got about 3 minutes here, but we do expect a very, very active storm season. In fact, this time next weekend, Mike, we'll be talking about a blizzard that'll be moving through the upper Midwest and the northern plains. It'll be west of Chicago. But all the numerical models are locking on to another large storm system coming out of Colorado, which got buried with a foot and a half of snow just about 3 or 4 days ago, which I might add is fantastic for them. They love this kind of stuff early in the year because the snow is heavy, the snow is wet, and it percolated into the soil, which went right into the groundwater, which obviously fed their reservoirs and lakes and streams. So this was great news for them. They loved it out there. But we'll probably be talking about anywhere between 45 and about 50 inches of snow this year in Chicago. I don't see us in any sort of bone-chilling Arctic blast that lasts for about a week or two. But again, the pattern is beginning to set up very early. Large storm systems, very active pattern. A lot of heavy, wet snow for early in the year and probably late in the year with your typical, mid-December, mid-January cold snaps. But otherwise, Mike, I think this winter could look a lot like last winter without a doubt.
Which is okay and not okay. I mean, it's because we had a pretty significant amount of snow, but it wasn't earth shattering,
No, and to think that the one thing that municipalities look at more than anything is not how much snow we get, but the number of events we have and the duration of the season. Because what everybody gets worried about is early season snowfall depleting the salt resources. And then all of a sudden, the supply of salt begins to go down, the demand goes up, and what does that do to the price? It skyrockets. So what happens every year is everybody kind of budgets how much money they're going to spend on clearing the streets, how much salt they need, and then all of a sudden they get to about the middle of the snow season and they go, okay, guys, let's put half as much salt down for for this 2 to 4 inch snowfall as we did for the first one, because everybody oversalts in the beginning of the year. That's just the way it is. I've seen this happen time and time again.
And of course, it's just it wreaks havoc on plants too.
Well, yeah, without a doubt. But I think from an economic standpoint, everybody always becomes a little bit more conscious once you get a lot of snow early in the year, and that certainly was the case last year. But if you recall, after that February 2nd blizzard of last year, we only had maybe one storm the rest of the year. The rest of the winter was actually pretty good.
Yeah,
so overall, below normal temperatures, above normal snowfall, but I think typical of what we've seen around here the last 3 years.
And then when we get that 40-inch snowstorm, you'll say, well, that's what I really meant. It's, you know.
Yeah, but think about this. There's parts of the Northeast right now that have 20 inches of snow. And that's probably going to be one-third of their entire seasonal snowfall. And it's not even November 1st. Think about that. This was pretty much one for the book. This will probably go down as the biggest snowstorm in the history of the Northeast and New England in the month of October. And some of those records go back to the mid-1600s, Mike.
That's, wow.
That shows you something.
So, it's all about climate variability.
It really is, and I really think, you know, more will be talked about this when we really begin to learn how to link up the tropics with the polar regions, and that's time for another show, Mike, without a doubt.
I think we're getting to the point where we're going to have to do a whole show on this, or at least a whole hour and just talk about the climate.
That's right. Talking about food deserts, I think, more important than climate change.
I don't think so. I really don't. I mean, the food deserts are going to be affected by this in the future, but we will do that. But what about Chicago this week?
This week we have some rain moving into the area. We'll probably get here probably by about maybe 1 or 2 o'clock. Temperatures today in the low to mid-50s. We clear out tomorrow, but we'll be on the cool side with readings in the low 50s. And then we warm up, low 60s on Wednesday, probably mid-60s on Thursday with some rain. And then this big storm that sweeps up into the northern plains will pass us on Friday. So I wouldn't be surprised by Wednesday and Thursday. We have showers and thunderstorms, and we probably will have an early season, an early November severe weather outbreak in the upper Midwest. But this time next week, Mike, we're going to be talking about blizzard conditions across portions of Nebraska, Kansas, and even into Dakotas and western Minnesota. There's going to be a big storm coming through the upper Midwest and northern plains.
But not here.
Not here. We're generally on the wet side here.
Okay. That's Rick DeMaio. You can go to DeMaioWeather.com or go to my website, MikeNovak.net.
Or you can talk to me at the gas station while I'm pumping fuel, right?
Yeah. Go ahead. Are you on one of those little screens they have now?
Oh, God. I hate those things. Oh, man.
I do, too.
Can we not watch TV 25 hours a day?
Shit. No, we have to. Absolutely. Yeah. Speaking of that, you got any TV? No, you said you don't for a little while here.
Nothing until about the Christmas time. I'm busy with other stuff.
You're teaching climate change. And climate variability.
Yeah,
all right,
just
Rick,
educating people on the world, Mike.
And doing a great job. We appreciate it. All right, talk to you next week. And coming up in the second hour, you know, call us, 773-838-9278. I want to kind of open the phone lines and talk about this food summit that Rahm Emanuel had, and I wonder if people have opinions about it. I want to know what you think about getting Walmart and Walgreens involved. Is that the way to solve the food crisis? We'll be back after the news.
I told the witch doctor I was in love with you. I told the witch doctor I was in love with you. And then the witch doctor, he told me what to do. He said that...
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Our business is people and their love for trees. And by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed. It starts with the soil. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
You know, it's a little scary that this is how the chipmunks got started.
Isn't it? It was with the witch doctor.
And speeding up tape.
Mm-hmm, that's it.
I mean, just we'll play it at twice the speed.
Yeah.
Wow,
and
doesn't that sound
they
funny?
They sound like chipmunks. Well, wait a second. I think we can do something with this and make millions and millions and millions of dollars.
I'll become a gazillionaire and rule the airwaves.
From
speeding up tape.
I mean, and is there anything more eloquent than ooh-ee, ooh-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla-bing-bang? If that doesn't encompass life, I don't know what does.
It is. It says everything.
Right there. It's the Walla Walla Bing Bang that sells it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
the Witch Doctor.
We had, now, is this interesting call we had during,
Yes. It was hard to get everything he was saying at once, but apparently there's, something going on where, involving foreclosures, with one of the big banks has been going in and killing all the garden life, the trees, ripping out the bushes, you know, any foliage, any vegetable gardens of such nature, and basically, I think, just laying down sod.
Hmm.
And that was and there was a lot more to it. And some of the people that were involved didn't want to be involved, but they're afraid of losing their jobs if they say anything. So this listener, I gave him our email addresses and to send us the more info and more detail, and we'll start digging and see what we can find about this bank killing all the gardens, apparently.
And it's homes in foreclosure.
Yes.
Is that the idea?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, and while we're at it, let's just. Let's just rip up everything and
And there was a lot more to it, and you could tell he was very emphatic about wanting to get the word out that this was happening, but at the same time nervous because I think a lot of money and a lot of people's livelihoods kind of hang in the balance.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. The nice part was, though, he's like, I was like, well, thank you for calling us, and he was just like, well, who else would I call? I was like, that's why we're here, folks. That's why we're here.
This is why we're here, and that's why if folks want to give me a call, 773-838-9278, talking about the food summit that was held in Chicago this past week with Rahm Emanuel and him bringing in a bunch of folks, including mayors from other cities. You heard Michael Howard talk about that. In the first hour, because he was there. And it's good that there were a number of community representatives at this this summit, and I use air quotes around summit, because it's just a meeting, actually, kind of an informational meeting, really, I guess.
And the name Walmart
wasn't there. Frequently. What?
And the name Walmart was dropped frequently.
Yeah. And Walgreens. And this is part of this initiative. A number of things going on, you know, because Michelle Obama, of course, has talked about ending food deserts and bringing in companies like Walmart and Walgreens to put fresh produce. And this is a complicated issue. I posted this on my Facebook page just last night, and when I got up coming in to work this morning, I had an interesting post. Now, I'm trying to see here whether it's on – did I do it on the Mike Novak Show? I've got the Mike Novak Show, of course, and then I've got – oh, and you put pictures up from Boopalooza at – Wicker Park. So my comment online was, did Michelle Obama really know what she was getting into when she decided that Walmart was the way to fix the food desert problem in America? Chicago might be the test case. And the reason I say that is because now that these people have been here and there's been this meeting in Chicago, it's all over the blogosphere. And if you go to my website, mikenovak.net, this week's show, I have a bunch of the articles that have been written in various places, many on blogs, you know, like grist.org, some on Bloomberg, just various places that people are talking about this, some food blogs, some environment blogs, and other online sites. And I actually got a response right away this morning from Julie, who wrote, yes, all fronts need to be addressed. Working with Walmart to improve sustainability of food choices and get fresh local foods on the shelves makes a huge impact, as do solar panels on Walmart roofs or a green roof, as there is on the Walmart in Chicago, the one on Grand Avenue. That's a good thing. But there are bad things as well, because Walmart doesn't pay its employees particularly well. And they, and because the benefits are so bad, and of course they, there was a news article this week that they're going to reduce the benefits, that makes them go to the state or the government. So the cost gets passed along to us, the taxpayers, because Walmart doesn't pay them properly. Is that good? Is that part of what we want to be doing? They also, as we know, help take down local businesses when everybody's going to Walmart. And I saw an article about the food that's being sold at Walmart. I was reading up on this yesterday for the show, and the point the person was making is that, you know what? It's really not that much cheaper than a lot of other places. It really isn't. We just get this, part of that's marketing, folks. If they say they're the cheapest, then perhaps everybody believes it. I say that about garden centers. You know, I know garden centers, independent garden centers often get a rap because their plant material is supposed to be so much more expensive than going to the box stores. And by the box store, of course, we mean Home Depot, and we mean Walmart, and we mean Menards, and we mean all of those places. But if you really check, they're not. But it's the perception, and perception is everything. Let's go to line one, bring in George in Gary, Indiana. How you doing, George?
Pretty good, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think that, regardless of bad actors that may be involved, public-private partnership is unavoidable. When municipalities are so strapped for cash, you have to kind of depend on somebody like Walmart or Walgreens to up the ante. But if we set the goals and set the priorities and have them be a helper in that thing, like with financial backing, I think the most important thing is to get young people involved at a very young age, as young as kindergarten, get them started in understanding how to grow food, what it's about, where the food comes from, and teach these kids something that they can take with them for the rest of their life and actually teach them to do something with their hands. Because, frankly, this No Child Left Behind garbage that we've been eating from the Bush administration for so many years has proven to be ineffective in educating our young people. When I was in school, we had trade school training. We had wood shop. We had metal shop. You know, that you were taught to work with your hands. This plus the fact that if we teach kids to do these things, they become self-sufficient in a way that the pride that I see in my grandkids when they help me with my garden is unbelievable. I, as young as 4 years old, these kids were helping me turn the soil. They were helping me water the tomatoes and the peppers. These kinds of things are invaluable, and they'll take these things with them for the rest of their life. I think that involving young people from a very young age and making that part of our public school curriculum is a win-win for everybody. And we can, as far as I'm concerned, they've got high profits and low overhead compared to other companies because of their large buying power. We need to make them partners and make them accountable by handing some cash over to help these programs grow. That's what
okay,
I feel about.
So the question I would ask is, their model is when they roll into town, they demand that their suppliers sell them products cheaper than everybody else. How does that work on a local level then if we're trying to get our local food into a Walmart? Are they going to nickel and dime the same local producers?
This is where the public-private partnership has to include guys like Rahm Emanuel and, the local leaders in government have to require something from Walmart, including possibly contracts to purchase the food that's grown by these local schools and local farms. There's no reason why they shouldn't. And I'll tell you something about Walmart. I just bought Halloween candy there yesterday, and it is not the biggest bargain in the world. They're actually no cheaper than anyone else. And the margins on some stuff is a little bit lower.
Yeah.
But by and large, they're just as expensive as any other store, sometimes more so. So we need to use their money. It's kind of like the Wall Street thing, buddy. It's they've got the bucks, but we've got the numbers. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but it doesn't do us any good unless we use the numbers. And that's, when
absolutely.
And that's
absolutely why
there are things like Occupy Wall Street and Occupy Chicago and Occupy over the whole country.
Yeah.
I've been.
Can I say something about that real quick?
Sure.
I tend to veer off the the green aspect sometimes, but I think
you're highly distractible like I am.
Look, the whole movement is, it gives me great hope. I find these people to be the most patriotic Americans, second only to the boys and girls that are fighting overseas. These people are down there on the streets marching for what all of us have been feeling since Bush got in office in 2000. I mean, the game's been rigged. It's been rigged sadly and poorly in favor of the rich and the multinational corporations. And now that people are demanding a voice, it doesn't have to coalesce overnight. But the message is there. It's time to give people a fair shake. Thanks for taking my call, buddy.
Oh, thank you for calling. I really appreciate it. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, 773-838-9278. And he made a great point, and there's an echo in here, Heather, when I said, you know, it's not necessarily all that much cheaper, but we just let them take over our lives, and that's why.
Well, they have a little yellow smiley happy face.
Well, absolutely.
It's a little yellow smiley happy face. But one of our friends on Facebook, Miss Hannah Dwyer, gave us this great link called Walmart Watch, walmartwatch.org. And it's all about keeping them responsible for what they do in local communities and et cetera, et cetera. Sadly, I haven't been able to look through the whole thing yet, but it's how you can take action, how you can blog, how you can get involved about what happens when they actually come into your community. And they have a Facebook and a Twitter.
Well, and that's the point, mobilizing. Who was I listening to? It might have been Norman Goldman the other day, and somebody was saying that this whole Occupy thing, they're going about it wrong. And my feeling was, no, they're not. This is what's working.
Yes.
This is how, you know, what do you want us to do? Oh, the guy said, well, you've got to vote. Well, yes, you've got to vote. But guess what? If you're voting for candidates who are in the pockets of big business, you've already lost.
Yeah, you have no option. And then I like, too, that they're getting harassed with, you know, curfews in public parks, and that they're convening in publicly owned spaces where these Occupy protests are happening. And they're doing whatever they can to cut them off early, to get them out. And again, they're on public property. It's public. It's not, you know, privately owned. Mm-hmm. It's not business owned, but they're still getting pushed around.
Well, it's certainly a First Amendment issue, and that's one of the things I like about the Occupy Chicago, Occupy Wall Street movement, is that they are exercising their First Amendment rights, and this is what the Founding Fathers looked at and saw a way for us to redress our grievances by standing out in the public square. We've got Hannah on the line. Let's talk to Hannah. You're on the Mike Novak Show, Hannah.
Hi, hold on. Let me just turn on my radio. I'm listening to you from like 30 seconds ago.
That's right.
And then I just got your email, Hannah.
Yeah. Well, I was calling because there's always been a Walmart in my town, and I've noticed recently that the prices at Walmart are becoming more comparable to the other stores that have still managed to hang on. And I just feel, you know, you flood the market with cheap goods when no one can compete. The market's yours to do what you want with, and now it's finally hitting the point where they can just start playing with the prices because there's no one left to stand up to them.
Yeah, and what do you think about this idea that they are the solution or part of the solution for solving the food desert problem?
As a Walmart?
Yeah, the Walmart.
Honestly, when she was talking about the Walgreens, I was more on par with that, because when you put a Walmart in, there's not a Walmart, you know, there's not several Walmarts in a big city. There's usually just one. So the people who live farthest from the Walmart still have a difficult time. But when there's more smaller pharmacy stores spread out through locations, it's more accessible to people.
Mm-hmm. So you think that the Walgreens model makes more sense?
It's just, I'm not necessarily Walgreens specifically, but smaller, more decentralized locations.
Well, yeah. Well, the decentralization obviously is going to be a good thing. And why wouldn't it be local businesses? You know,
oh,
why
that'd
wouldn't
be
it
better.
Be? I mean, let's talk about the tax base and where the money goes.
Yeah.
You know, I found out a couple of years ago that one of the largest tax base in the city in terms of neighborhoods in Chicago is, not surprisingly, the Magnificent Mile. Okay, I get that. I was told that the number two tax base is Little Village. I would not have guessed that. And the reason being because the money stays there. There are so many local businesses that the money stays there.
Yeah, there's, I don't know what town it was. I remember reading about it. There was a town that was fighting Walmart because so many of their employees wind up on state assistance because the pay is so low. They actually, the stipulation for allowing a Walmart into their town was they were taxing them. It was like 8% of the profits just to recoup the losses that the state was having to shell out for these people because they were just being paid so little, they were having to depend on outside sources for help.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if they did something like that, you know, like a certain amount of your profits are going to go towards, you know, making up for the fact that, you know, these people are being paid a pittance. It's really sad.
Well, the answer is just pay them better.
Yeah.
Pay them better. Isn't it, that seems a lot easier. It's just like, you know, let's pay a living wage. Let's you know, let's give them benefits and give them health insurance, and you know that's that just you know it just as brings
away.
You know I got in trouble on Facebook last week I think it was when I posted something and I said that I called America a barbaric country.
I remember that.
Oh yeah, okay. You were following, and some people called me to task for it because. They thought it was hyperbole. And I said, no, when you don't take care of your elderly, when you don't take care of your infirm.
People cheering for the death of an uninsured person.
Yeah,
there
you go. And I didn't even mention that. People cheering for the death penalty, people cheering for let the guy die. That's barbarism.
You want to see really scary? There's a movie on Hulu called What's the Matter with Kansas? And it is the epitome of that. And just the fact that there are people who think like so violently about people who are different from them.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was about, you know, there's a man down there providing abortions who was murdered, and these people are just like frothing at the mouth, and just the violence and the hatred for someone who believes something different from you. It was just, it, you know, I agree with you about the barbarism.
Yeah, and that's always the interesting part of the pro-lifers that. They're against a woman's right to choose, and yet they would love to see you fry
mm-hmm.
in the electric chair.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I've never gotten that.
It's an oxymoron in its own right. It's mm-hmm. a contradiction in terms.
So, well, Hannah, thank you so much for your comments. I appreciate it. All right. 773-838-9278 is our telephone number. Chris from Palatine is on the line. How you doing, Chris?
Oh, fantastic. It's been a great week. I was mentioning to your screener, Heather, that you know, I spent it walking through a forest of gold.
A forest of gold?
Yes. The leaves of the trees were very, you know, are a combination of bright yellow and bronze. And I'm looking right out my window right now at a fairly tall oak tree that's very orange.
And aren't you glad that there aren't 12 inches of snow on it right now?
You better believe it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, the fascinating thing, too, is the deer are out. And the deer, at least up here, and this is Deer Grove area. Deer Grove Forest.
Well, that's why they call it that,
yes,
right?
Yes. But I came across a curve in a trail and literally was like eyeball to eyeball with a deer. I mean, like maybe 5 feet away from me.
Mm-hmm.
And these are almost domesticated. I mean, they are really tame. They're not afraid of us at all. And yesterday I was walking and actually came up to within like 20 yards of a buck. And I was just watching him.
You know, if I find a buck on the ground, I just pick it up.
Yeah, well, that's true. But this one had horns on it and was moving. So,
that would be a little more difficult.
Yeah, but you were talking about, you know, small foods grocery stores. If I could bring that up for a minute.
Sure.
Reminds me, I grew up in a suburban Long Island town in the 50s. And by the way, don't make fun of the chipmunks. I mean, you're talking about a cultural icon.
Okay.
But and they remember they had television shows made.
I watched the Chipmunks growing up, okay?
So did I.
So that's why I get to diss them if I want.
Oh, okay. But just remember, you'll see their Christmas special coming up pretty soon. But anyway, back then they had the biggest grocery store was a local chain, and the store might have been, let's say, maybe 10,000 square feet, if even that big. And there were a large, and they had a, you know, small little grocery stores that, you know, were stacked vertically. In fact, you had to get somebody who had one of these little reach extender things to get the boxes of cereal that were off on the very top shelf that they couldn't reach. But the economies of scale have just changed, you know, so much that we just can't afford to do that anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and realistically, I mean, even I lived in Lincoln Park. I mean, you're familiar with that area. I know you're a little south of there. But, I mean, there were, like, local grocery stores that were very, that's were there during when we moved in the early 80s and that have closed. Mm-hmm. And they were doing things such as, you know, offering charge accounts for people and offering delivery services, which, you know, were very, very convenient. But I think those little stores really only survive and thrive in affluent areas. And, you know, the affluent areas are not the food desert areas. The poor areas are the food desert areas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that is the biggest issue. And, you know, how in the stores that are there, you know, basically serve garbage. You know, they,
And like I said at the beginning of this, my question is, how do we make it work knowing that, okay, as you say, perhaps these businesses can't survive, but perhaps they can. I don't know. Maybe we need a new model for that. But the model of Walmart coming in and, you know, putting this huge footprint in a neighborhood and then sucking the life out of the businesses around it, is that sustainable? I mean, do we want that? And do we want that money going to the Walmart fortune? How do we keep the tax dollars here, and how do we keep people employed, and how do we keep them having a decent wage?
Well, that's a good question. That's a $64,000 question. But there was a little grocery, little drugstore called Shinnick's that was on Armitage, right underneath the L. And I got, when I was young kids, believe me, I got to know the pharmacist very, 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 very well, because of all the various, you know, things that they had. And he was mentioning to me that their prices were about the same as Walmart. You know, slightly, you know, not really much difference between them and there. But people had, again, you said the perception, the advertising. But you figure if you're a small grocery store, small retailer, you know, you look at the overhead you have, look at what you have to do. And after a while, I think when his father died, who founded the store, you know, he and his brother sold it and went off to probably work for Walmart, because why put up with all the hassles and everything else when you can get a reasonable paycheck and not have to worry about it?
Well, I'll tell you something. Running a business is not easy. Running a small business is very, very difficult. I know, because I do,
yeah.
You know, and I know people who run businesses, and it is backbreaking. And you go to bed thinking about money, and you wake up thinking about money.
Well, not only that, but you also go to bed worrying if your staff is going to show up in the morning, and you know, get a telephone call at 6 o'clock saying that, you know, one of the clerks isn't going to be is sick, or his kid is sick, or her kid is sick, or whatever, and is not going to be able to be there, and so therefore you got to go in there and open up the store at, you know, 6:30 instead of having your staff do it. So, I mean, yeah, I think there are a lot of other issues that you have to deal with, and I don't know. You say changing the model. I'm not sure how you change a model. Where everybody right now needs to have a dollar switch be stretched to do the job of about $2.50.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, I'm asking, you know, because I'm putting this out there because what I saw, and if you go to my website, you'll see all these articles, and I see people saying, "Oh, they just gave $1 million to a Growing Power, sell out," you know, and then Will Allen from Growing Power says, "No, you have to learn how to work this system, and this is how we work it." Here's the problem with that: Growing Power, in the scheme of things, is maybe the largest player in Chicago, so they're the big guy. So where does the money come for the little guy? And, you know, if it's always, I mean, I wouldn't turn down $1 million if somebody threw it at me, but I would want to know what they expected from me and what's going to happen down the line. There's some people saying, well, what happens when Walmart gets on the board of Growing Power? Is that the next thing they're going to ask for? And then suddenly they are complete, you know, I think of the Borg. Well, you know, in Star Trek.
Well, you,
resistance,
you know,
is futile.
You also have that conspiracy theory, and I think that's one of the problems that, you know, some people on the left tend to have, is they view everything, you know, in a conspiratorial light, and I'm not just going to disagree with you.
Well, and come on, for good reason, because of a history of having things co-opted. This is, it doesn't always happen. No, it doesn't always happen, but big money can corrupt.
Well, yep, you could say that. Yes, absolutely. You know, small money can corrupt too.
Tell me about it.
You know,
you want to throw some my way? That'd be good.
Yeah, I know.
I'll be
and,
corrupted
and in
for
actuality,
you.
It's the lack of money that, you know, causes more issues rather than having the excess of money.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't think there is an answer, you know, because areas that have, you know, the high poverty areas, you know, those stores are also facing, you know, vandalism. They're facing theft, you know, facing a whole slew of issues that, you know, you don't have necessarily in, you know, in other areas.
And well, but you do. You know, that's the other thing. I bet I'd be interested to hear how much gets pilfered from a Walmart in the affluent suburbs. I'll bet a lot. I mean, I wonder what their budget is for theft, and I'll bet it's considerable, and it happens everywhere. Just as we know, crime can happen anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even unfortunately in forest preserves.
Okay, listen, Chris, I understand you made a request.
Yes.
All right, hit it, Heather. This may not be the version you wanted, but this is the version I like.
Okay. Oh, I like Louis.
Oh, Louis's great, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I requested either Sinatra or Louis.
Oh, well, there we go. You got Louis Prima, old Black Magic. All right, thanks for calling, Chris. I appreciate it.
He was great Black Magic.
Yes, he does. All right, take care, buddy.
And then that elevator starts its
ride. Down and down I go. Louis Prima. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We've been chatting a little bit about the food summit and the problems with bringing the big businesses in. In just a few minutes, we have the folks from Faith and Place here who are going to be talking about the winter farmers markets. Maybe they even have opinions about some of this. I might go down that road with them. Before we do, let's go to Chester in Chicago. You're on the Mike Novak Show, Chester.
Yes, good morning. I'm up here in Rogers Park, and you know, two comments I'd like to make. For last hour's talk about lead, I do have I use a point-of-use water filter at my kitchen faucet.
Okay.
And it claims to take care of lead and other things.
Let me remind people, when we had Michael Howard on in the first hour, he talked about how there is not only lead in the soil in an urban area, but in older cities, you might be dealing with lead pipes that propel your water, bring your water to your home, and that can lead to lead in the water as well, and especially in older homes. And I believe mine is a lead pipe coming into my home, my 125-year-old home. So that's the issue there, Chester.
Right. And I can mention the brand name if I'm allowed to do so.
Go for it. I don't care.
It's called Aqua Sana. It's available through mail order or through the Internet. And I replace the filters every 6 months.
And it filters out lead?
That's what it claims to, yes, among other things. Yes.
All right. Now, how do we check, see, what you would want to do is get that water that comes out of there and then have a lab analyze it and see if there's lead in there to make sure it's living up to its claim. Aqua Sauna, S-A-U-N-A, is that how it's spelled?
That is correct, yes.
Okay. And I'm sure it's filtering out other things as well.
Yes, it claims to herbicides, pesticides, and other things. But the point I'd like to
Can I ask one quick question before that? What kind of technology does it claim to use?
It has two filters. It's not reverse osmosis. It's sedimentation filters, two separate ones. And it sits on a counter, and it has a tube coming from the faucet and then back to the faucet. So when one wants to use it, they just pull a little button. It goes through the system and then comes out.
Huh.
So it's a convenience, and it's it doesn't require any type of plumbing work or, you know, just basic you know, Sunday morning type efforts.
So you push the little key down, the water goes round and round, whoa, and it comes out here.
Yes.
Okay. All right, and what was the other point you wanted to bring up?
Okay, I'm up in Rogers Park, and there's a whole bunch of, let's say on Howard Street, a whole bunch of little grocery stores.
Yeah.
Where one can get liquor, cigarettes, lottery tickets, things like that.
But probably not a whole lot of fresh vegetables.
Exactly. And they're heavy on the chips and all the colored sodas, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's more of an educational thing. Also, it's a convenience thing. If a Walmart comes in, you know, obviously the goal is to get as many people to consume fruits and vegetables, healthy fruits and vegetables as much as possible. But the logistics behind a Walmart, big parking lot, takes up a couple of at least a block or a couple of blocks.
Mm-hmm.
Superstore. Most of the people in the city, at least up here and many other places in the city, are walkable. There's a whole bunch of walkable stores.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that frequent these stores to walk in, get a bag of chips, walk right back out, walk in, et cetera, et cetera, they're not going to deal too well with a massive parking lot, walking into a big Walmart store, waiting to get in line, et cetera, et cetera. It's not feasible. I think the better approach would be a whole bunch of small stores and to have true organic fruits and vegetables. Because a lot of people are turned off by the stale taste of conventional fruits and vegetables. I also work in a community garden, and a couple of times it's amazing to see the reaction of people once they taste a tomato or something, you know, right off the vine.
Oh, yeah.
And if they were to go to a store and get a conventional apple, you know, they're going to say, you know, why bother? Especially if they have to cross a parking lot and go through to the massive Walmart store. Better to have little things, little stores here and there that serve quality produce. The other issue is the companies that provide the material for these stores, the distributors. I've worked in here and there in the past on trying to get improved food in various stores, and the big headache is going up against the distributors. They have a minimum quantity that they have to get per day or per week, and it also has to happen at the distributor level. People have to be committed to it. So I'd like the idea that Michelle Obama is pushing for getting rid of food deserts, but using the idea of a Walmart, I think, is not going to work in a city.
You know, and I got a couple of tweets. One that came in from Zan, who says, and I don't know if it was probably not in reference to you, but somebody else, she says, that is wrong. Locally owned groceries thrive in ethnic working class neighborhoods all over the city. And I'll give you a perfect example of that in my own neighborhood at the corner of Armitage and Kimball. Not exactly, Magnificent Mile. There's a produce stand. That place rocks. You know, it's people coming and going all day long, and they just expanded, and I get my produce there often, and I love the fact that I can walk down the block into a local place and get what I need, and they seem to respond. You know, now it's in our lot of Hispanic foods because it's a Hispanic neighborhood. But that's okay, but they respond to the needs of all the citizens there. And I think there's a lot more like that, than would be suggested by the idea of food deserts. Maybe these things, there's a model that does make them work. And maybe it's the people in the neighborhood. Again, you said education. I agree. That's the whole deal. Education. Teach people how to eat. We forgot how to eat. We don't know how to eat anymore. Maybe we never did, but I don't think so. I think things changed about 50 or 60 years ago, and we went down this road, and it's a cul-de-sac, and we got to get out of it. Hey, listen, thanks a lot for the call, and I'm glad you're listening to the Mike Novak Show. Take care. 773-838-9278. I got to get some business, and I got a tweet from Kathleen who said she's calling me to task here. And she's right. She said, Louis Prima, fine. But wasn't that the magnificent Keeley Smith singing with him? Credit where credit is due. She's right. Louis and Keeley. Keeley Smith on there as well. And I'll cop to it with full transparency. I forgot her name. I was sitting there thinking, anyway, it's Louis Prima and so I just moved on. Thank you for that information. Kathleen. We've got the folks from Faith in Place coming up in just a sec. Get back to nature with Back to Nature Compost. We recommend checking out its special blend of cotton burr compost, which is a great costume idea for Halloween. Cotton burr compost man. Not exactly sure how one would do that, but I think you could figure it out.
Sounds smelly, though. Probably look real good and scary, but maybe
that's what I'm thinking. Scary though,
a touch odoriferous.
Or maybe you just put the compost bag over your head and put two eye holes in there
with the tea. There's a scary costume. Be a teabagger.
Oh, dear. Actually, it's a good time to put some cotton burr compost to work in your garden to prepare it for the spring. Right now would be great. Famous for its ability to loosen clay soil, the organic mixture consists of composted cotton burrs, which feed the organisms that feed your soil. And speaking of the organisms in your soil, uh-oh. Did this thing freeze on me again?
I think it did.
It froze on me the other...
It's alive! It's live, including the radio!
Oh, it's totally
it's
pro.
It's live radio.
Oh, no. Well, we're gonna have to put that back up in
wow.
a second.
Okay.
Why doesn't it like me anymore? It's this computer. Oh, just please.
It's owned by Walmart. And now it's angry with you.
It is. It is angry with me. Okay. Well, we got to – let's see. Okay. Scrolling. We're here. That's what I want. I think it's going to work now. All right. Anyway, back to cotton burr compost. No, we're cool, Mike. It just,
thank you.
It was the –
the angry machine.
Yeah, media picks, not the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Wally Apeshes and I both love Back to Nature products, so give them a try. Back to Nature Cotton Burr Compost is available at Burlington Garden Center in Burlington, Wisconsin, Red's Garden Center in Northbrook, Knupers, or Knuppers, however you pronounce it, Nursery and Landscape in Palatine. Back to Nature. Life doesn't start with the seed. It starts with the soil.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Alive! It's alive! It's alive!
There we go. That's what I was trying to play, and I couldn't get it. Here's something the Care of Trees would like you to remember. Your trees are living, breathing, growing things, but a lot of people lump their trees into the same category as their roofs or their driveways. That is to say, they consider them maintenance items and not living organisms, and they expect the impossible. For instance, they wonder why you can't cut off 90% of the tree's roots and expect it to survive. Ah! Silly tree. Or they can't understand why constantly bumping a lawnmower into the trunk can be destructive. The Care of Trees understands how complex trees are and wants you to know that we shouldn't expect box store solutions to solve their problems. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees. And when they come to your house and they see your tree, they're going to say,
it's alive. It's alive. It's alive. It's alive. It's alive! Oh, in the name of God, now I know what it feels like to be God.
Oh. Wow, those carrot tree guys really get into it,
yeah.
Don't they? Yeah.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
We already played this.
Yes, we did.
Wrong CD. Okay.
Live radio.
Live radio. Let's go back.
No automated player here, folks.
No way. Mm-mm. We try this now.
Just a crazy old gardener.
Till I break your bill. You gotta jump back, heap a jeep, you gotta get back, heap a jeep, you gotta jump back, heap a jeep, you gotta jump back, duck back, heap a jeep, you gotta get back, get back, heap a jeep, you gotta jump back, duck back, heap a jeep, you gotta jump back, duck back, heap a jeep, you gotta jump back, duck back, heap a jeep, you gotta jump back, duck back, heap a jeep, you gotta jump back, duck back, heap a jeep, you gotta jump back, duck back, heap a jeep, you gotta jump back, duck back, heap a jeep, you gotta jump back, duck back, heap a jeep, you gotta jump back, duck back, heap a jeep, you gotta jump back, duck back, heap a jeep, you gotta jump back, duck back, heap a jeep, you gotta jump back, duck back, heap a jeep, you gotta jump back, duck back, heap a jeep, you gotta jump back, duck back, heap a jeep, you gotta jump back, duck back, heap a jeep, you gotta jump back, duck back, heap a jeep, you gotta
Heepa jeepa, gonna get back. Heepa jeepa, gonna jump back. Heepa jeepa, gonna bad luck, baby, put the janks on me. I got to
have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Give it the gravy, Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house.
Sustainable food fundamentals. Growing good food that's good for the earth.
Catch a Tory Dory. Taste a bologna, Tony. Everybody eats when they come to my house.
That means it's time to talk to our friends from Faith in Place in the studio, Robin Shermer and Layla Shushani. Can we swing that mic over there to them, and they'll each get one? And Robin, welcome back.
Thank you.
Were you here last year? Was it last year?
It might have been 2 years ago.
I can't
remember.
And
I should clarify that I am not with Faith in Place, but I did work with the organization that preceded Faith in Place with the winter markets.
Actually, you're with Tomato Mountain Farm.
And I'm now with Tomato Mountain Farm, who I met through the winter farmers markets. It
all
comes
full
circle.
How cool is that? We've got the Tomato Mountain Farm card here, and you can still join a CSA.
Absolutely, we do a CSA all the way through December, and lots of greens, lots of instant gratification, but that's not why I'm here.
Well, you're here actually because of your old job, and talking about the winter's farmers markets. One of the sad things about the fall is that the farmers markets stop. And not all of them. That's the good news. And now there are some in the city. There are some areas, but a number of them are. I don't have that. You can. There we go. We've got a list of them, and I actually have. Oh yeah, you got this to me this morning. I saw this, I have some of the list up on my website, mikenovak.net. If you go to this week's show, the list of the farmers markets through December. And they're pretty much every weekend starting next week.
Next week is our first week.
Yay! That's Layla Shushani, and she's a congregational outreach and support with Faith in Place. So, and then Robin Shermer used to be with them. And tell me about why these are important.
Well, our markets are really important for two main reasons. One, we have the aspect of the farmers, that it's a way to support them in the off-season. Like you said, they're not growing as many of the same big buck crops that maybe would be really popular in the summer. So these markets then offer a way for them to make money in the winter. And then also it's a way to support local eating and nutritious eating for the consumers throughout the winter.
You know, you guys must have been listening to this conversation. They were sitting in the studio while I was talking about the food summit in Chicago and Walgreens and Walmart. I just bet you have some opinions about local food. What about that the model of sustainability in terms of, business model? Can small food establishments, retail food establishments survive?
It's an uphill battle. I know that I think a goal for local food in the Chicago area from, for instance, Fresh Taste Initiative is to try to bring it up to 10%. And I thought, only 10%? And apparently that would be huge, that it's really something probably
10%
less than
of what? I'm sorry.
Of food consumed in the Chicago area
would be local.
And it's probably something less than
1%. Yeah, less than 1%. That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Well, the Illinois Food Farms and Jobs Task Force is trying to get it to 20% by 2020. All right. And if you're saying that getting it to 10 seems like climbing a tomato mountain, thank you. Notice how I dovetailed that in there. you can see the enormity of the task. Mm-hmm. Part of what some people say is let's give the local farmers and have them put it in the into the larger markets and have them. And as I mentioned earlier, what I worry about is this food, if Walmart does their usual thing and says, okay, well, you sell it to me at the lowest possible price, how are they making a living on this? By producing fresh nutritious, accessible food.
Well, one of the beauties of farmers markets, whether they're summer or winter, is that it's a direct relationship between you and a farm. There isn't a middleman. There isn't somebody saying, let me scrape a big profit margin off the top. So farmers markets at any time of year are a very important thing for farmers. They're also wonderful for consumers.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the beautiful things about the Faith in Place markets that I had a hand in shaping a few years ago is that they bring these markets to communities that don't necessarily otherwise have one, mm-hmm. whether those be poor communities or affluent communities. You know, Green City Market is there for Lincoln Park and for much of the North Side.
Mm-hmm.
But we're out in Palatine and Elgin, Glenview, Jeffrey, Calumet Heights.
11 different cities throughout the Chicago area.
Yeah, that, tell me about, but you do this, Faith in Place obviously does this with churches and...
Yeah, different congregations of all denominations.
Yeah, of all denominations.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the list you gave me, and I have to add this to my website, Robin, you have a list, you handed me a list of all the indoor winter farmers.
That was my attempt.
Including Green City, Oak Street Market,
Brand new one in Evanston.
Okay. And some of the familiar ones like Logan Square, Winter Farmers Market, Geneva, Andersonville, new also,
yes.
Indoor. I mean, the North Side's really taken jumped on board with the Glenwood mm-hmm. Market and the Andersonville Market. They've embraced this.
And I would like to think that these markets that I've been involved in for the last 5 years, much less so now other than as a vendor, I think the CCLP/Faith in Place markets have really shown the way that if you build it, they will come, and have made it feasible for others to take the bull by the horns and have very big and successful winter farmers markets.
That's interesting that you see them as a model for what's going on in
absolutely.
The winter. All right, folks are going to want to go to these markets, but you're not going to find exactly the same things you find in the summer. That's just not feasible. But you get some of the stuff. I mean, what kinds of things do the farmers sell in the winter markets that are the staples?
Well, some of our farmers have hoop houses, which allow them to grow greens throughout the market. There's going to be all your favorite winter veggies.
What are the favorite winter veggies?
Squashes.
Right.
And potatoes and apples. We'll have some produce. And actually, it's also really great because we're going to have some pickled goods like Tomato Mountain does. They do salsas and other stuff. So maybe Robin can speak a little.
Tomato Mountain has its own kitchen and processes salsas, preserves, soups, things like that that we do from our organic harvest mm-hmm. on the farm a half block from where it's been picked and only in season. That's a kitchen that's closed for the rest of the year.
But this is something that people can take advantage of in the winter farmers markets are the canned, preserved items. And, of course, if an outfit like Tomato Mountain is doing it, you're licensed.
This
is something that is you probably can't get a lot of places.
Mm-hmm. But also at the winter markets, there are things that are generally at the summer markets like honey and cheese and mm-hmm. Frozen meats.
Yeah, meat.
And possibly some other dairy items and wool. Things that you really don't see at the summer markets because who wants to buy wool in July?
That's a great point.
But we have several farms.
Textiles. I've been to the winter farmers markets. You see a lot of textiles, mm-hmm. and that's really cool. Hey, listen, I want to take a quick phone call here for Dennis in Orland Park. He's been holding on a while. Dennis, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
How you doing, Mike? Hello?
You okay?
Yeah, how you doing, Mike?
Yeah, you shoveling your walk or something? I mean,
no, I was actually trying to hook up a blow up for my kids out in the front yard. About last Christmas, my kids had their hearts set on this one particular toy that I went online for Walmart, and they said they carried it. It was $99.95, and me and the wife went there, and we filled up the cart and found the item, and it was the item actually on display said $149.95. I went and called a manager. The manager came over and says, oh, we don't price match our online prices. I'm like, but I pulled up your store, and your store said $99.95. She's like, oh, no. Oh, by the way, we don't price match from store to store neither.
Hmm.
I said, so what are you saying? She's like, well, we price our stuff by the affluency of the area. Now, this store was in Lockport. I went to the store in Bridgeview, and it was $99.95. They were 50% higher because it was a better area.
Well,
that's Walmart for you.
That's a business model, I guess. That
yeah.
Interesting story. Well, and again, it goes back to what we were saying earlier. Are they really so much cheaper? And they might be in certain ways, but as you're saying, and other people have pointed out, it hasn't been necessarily their experience.
Right. I can understand maybe five bucks or whatever, but to be 50%, an extra
that's amazing.
Dollars.
Amazing story. Dennis.
And how many people that didn't catch that and how rich they're getting over on the people's back.
Well, you know, and that's the importance of being an informed consumer, which you obviously are.
That's why I wanted to get it out on your show there. So,
well, and I appreciate great story. Yeah, great story, Dennis. Thanks for calling in.
I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Back to Robin Shermer and Layla Shishani here in the studio. Now, we talked a little earlier about whether we... Well, okay, I'll kind of let the cat out of the bag. We're working on something together right now. I don't know that we've had the official go-ahead, even though I saw it on your website already. But we're hoping, and Sanders, hey, Mike Sanders, you out there? He and I are working on a kind of a food drive for WCPT, and that we want to do in early December, and... I'm just going to say it's in the works right now rather than say it's official because we're still talking and Layla and I had a meeting this week and part of the deal is going to be to educate people as to what good food is, sustainable, healthy food, local food, even in the winter. You know, as you point out, you can get stuff that you wouldn't. Mr. Sanders, get in here for a second. Lean into the microphone.
Trying to enjoy some coffee is all.
I know you are. But I was saying that it's not quite official yet, but we may be working on a little bit of a food drive.
Sustainable
here.
Food drive, yeah.
Sustainable food drive.
We've been talking about it.
Yeah, and the idea is going to be that we will run the drive. With the help of some of the networks in and around Chicago, and Faith in Place is approaching some of their churches as drop-off locations. And we're going to try to teach. It's a teaching moment. Teach people what healthy food is all about. So maybe instead of, you know, you throwing that box of Cheetos in there, you get some...
I give what I can.
I'm not looking at you specifically,
you're,
Mike.
You're looking at me.
Well, you're right, it was.
Okay.
But... you know, maybe there's something else. You know, some of the stuff that you're talking about, preserved stuff, Robin, and canned, and articles, or the as you said, standard winter food like apples and potatoes and squash and the things that are really good for you and can be bought at that time. But also the packaged stuff that is a little better for you. Maybe it doesn't have as much sodium. And we hope to teach people, and, you know, nuts and dried fruit, these are all different things that are, you know, half the time, my breakfast consists of some raisins, some prunes, and some almonds or some other nuts. It's you know, you get your protein, you get a little sweet in there. Maybe a slice of toast as well. You never know. I might do that as well. But so we're hoping that this will happen, December 4th.
Yeah, somewhere soon here.
Yeah. Somewhere soon. And Mike and I are going to co-host the thing together. It's going to be a big party. And we're going to ask everybody to get on board to our family, mm-hmm. Chicago's Progressive Talk family, that wants to look out after the less fortunate. And
in the best way possible.
In the best way possible, which is to... Get smart. Be a smart shopper. Help don't just, you know, throw your money at it. Make some intelligent choices when it comes to food. I would ask right now of either of the women in the room, what would you say some of those choices might be? I mean, I've talked about some of them. We had a list of stuff that includes grains, like quinoa. I mean, I want to introduce people to quinoa.
What's a quinoa?
A miracle grain.
It is. It's wonderful. You know, that might be better than pasta or rice because quinoa is a cool grain. I mean, I'm talking about things like that. It's like things they might not be aware of and they don't get all the time. And because they're a little, they can be a little pricey, you know.
Rumor has it that you are the chard king.
I am the, yes, I am the overlord.
Oh, okay.
I am Swiss chard overlord.
And that'll pop up through the snow if you keep it going. So.
And can you get that at a winter market?
Should be able to.
And see, the question is, can you then donate that to a, you know, and that's what we're going to find.
So.
Yeah, you know, put it in a food drive. Well, listen, this is all online. My website, MikeNovak.net. Not the food drive yet, but the Faith in Place, the winter farmers markets. You can or you can go to faithinplace.org. Or go to my website, MikeNovak.net, this week's show, and all that information is up. And as we get closer to this, we will tell you more. Isn't that right, Mike?
And we'll be talking about it on Our Town as well.
Yep.
That's right.
And we're going to plug
Plug for me, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Our Town, Sunday mornings at 8 a.m., just before the Mike Novak
just
show.
Just before, that's right.
All right. Well, thank you both, Robin and Layla, and we're going to continue to work together.
Thanks, Mike.
And go to Tomato Mountain. .com too, and get their stuff and pull that microphone over, Heather, because as we get to next week, Suzanne Malik McKenna finally is going to be former commissioner of the Department of the Environment. We'll talk about the environment and the fact that it no longer exists, or at least that department in Chicago. Until next time, go green or
go home.
See you then.